This is WABF. It's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campobonosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning. Right back to you there, Laurie. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Very good. Thanks for being with us.
Well, it's certainly good to be with you, as always. And, you know, I had a real hard time writing to our people about Happy New Year, okay? I don't really see a whole lot that's happy. And to tell you the truth, I don't think Biden does either, because he's had a terrible week. It's just absolutely...
Week?
Well, yes, I understand, but it's a new year, okay? So the administration is in disarray. There's inflation rampantly going crazy. You've got COVID, Omicron cases spreading everywhere. Thank goodness it is less deadly. But nevertheless, I mean, he was the president who came on and said, I'm going to destroy the COVID. I mean, that was one of his main campaign pledges. And of course, that's just turned upside down. More people have died under his watch than under Trump's. Although, if you remember, he said that any president who has this many deaths should not be president. It's an outrage. But nevertheless, that's where these people are and what they do. So, you know, we've got COVID, we've got inflation, you have issues with the teachers' unions in some of these big cities saying, absolutely no, we're not going back to school. Too bad, kids. It just seems to me that you've got major issues that are absolutely difficult to deal with, okay? There are complications with it, whether they're domestic issues or foreign policy issues. But it's inconceivable that Biden is just stuck in one lane only when it comes to inflation, and his idea is putting more money in there doesn't make any difference, which everyone knows it does make a difference. He's stuck in one lane when it comes to COVID. I mean, have you noticed that finally some of these doctors are coming out and say, look, you can't just rely on the vaccines? And this is a no-brainer. I mean, Laurie, think about it. They say you have to get the vaccine, and people have done that, and they're still getting COVID. So what does that tell you?
Have another booster. Have another booster.
Right. Keep on boosting. But the real issue now is, what about these therapeutics that I've been talking to you all about in terms of what is possible with all of our doctors, particularly in Alabama, who I've mentioned before? They've treated 8,000 to 10,000 people with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and they are successful. So here again, notice how the conservative approach to decentralized issues, decentralize this business of the vaccine. Let the doctors do what they do. They're smart people. They know what's going on. They can treat these sick people. So again, this business of being in the wrong lane is again one of these issues that I would say, you know, creates an opportunity for the Republicans, because they can certainly point out exactly what we need to do to rectify some of these issues. And to help us do that, I've asked Congressman Mo Brooks to come on the show this morning. Let's give truth in lending here. Common Sense Campaign, our board, has gone ahead and endorsed Congressman Brooks. You know, our feeling is that he is the MAGA candidate. And when you compare his record and all the things he's done standing up for conservative values year after year, despite vicious attacks from the left, the fact is that someone like Mo Brooks has to be in the Senate. And I think that's one of the reasons that we went ahead and endorsed him before the May, what we usually endorse closer to the primary.
Who's running against him?
Well, right now you've got Mike Durant, who's a newcomer into it. He's the Black Hawk Down guy. You've got Katie Britt, who is the former president of Business Council of Alabama and Senator Shelby's chief of staff. And then there's Jake Schaefer, who is a local candidate who's tossed his hat in the ring, too. Our argument in favor of Brooks, particularly over his main problem here, is with Katie Britt. Britt was president of the Common Sense, of the Business Council of Alabama, and while she was in that position, she supported the gas tax. She supported Amendment 1, which would have taken away your right to vote for your State Board of Education member. And as Senator Shelby's chief of staff, she was involved with how Shelby was able to put Doug Jones into the Senate when he went after Judge Moore and told people just sign in anyone's name other than Judge Moore. And he got 22,000 signatures. And,
wow.
And yeah, and Moore lost by 21,000. So, you know, I mean, Katie Britt can say what she wants in her campaign, you know, trying to pretend that she's, you know, a conservative with Alabama values, and yet her record, as short as it is, it completely takes you in a different direction. And, you know, we just don't trust anyone like that, and that's why, you know, we've endorsed Congressman Brooks. And I think that, you know, at this point, you know, the money that's coming against him is substantial. He's got a long high mountain here, but we think in the end he will prevail, as he has always prevailed in his races, where he's never had the support of the establishment, and he won't get their support because he is opposed to what the establishment wants. Those things that I talked to you about, raising taxes that Britt supported, the other issue in terms of, you know, creating a centralized education, board of education that had no input from the parents. And just look at that issue as it's played out, as you've seen it in Virginia and other places like that. It's critical that parents are involved with this. And I think that's one of the things that we have got to make sure that people like Katie Britt and others like that do not win this election. I think Congressman Brooks just came on the line. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Here he is.
Congressman, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Happy to be here. You can tell I'm a little bit hoarse.
Yes, I can hear that just a bit. Well, we'll live with that if you can live with it, okay? Let's dispense with the Happy New Year business. I was just telling Lori, I have a hard time saying Happy New Year. It's not really exactly happy. So if we can just jump right into this, I've told our listeners that I really wanted to have you try to help us sort out some of these issues that have been going on, okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
And one of them, you know, you're an expert in this. Your academic background is in economics. Talk to us about inflation, what should be done and what can be done to tamp this down.
Two things have to be done quickly to tamp the impact of inflation. One is we have to get rid of all these debt junkies in Washington, D.C., who create back-to-back $3 trillion deficits, who have racked up a $30 trillion total debt of the United States of America, which in turn has devalued our currency. That's one of the causes of inflation. The second cause of inflation is Democrat efforts to hurt our economy by causing people not to work. By way of example, we've spent billions upon billions of dollars paying people not to work over the last 2 years. I'm sorry, it just doesn't work that way. And if you can't get people to show up for work, then fewer goods and services are produced. When you have a decline in the supply and the demand being constant, that means you have a price increase. That's what we're seeing. If we were to add a third level, well, the Biden administration has an anti-energy policy that in turn has dramatically increased the cost of gasoline by more than a dollar per gallon. And that in turn is a part of all the price increases of all the goods that are produced and consumed in America, because they're all transported using oil. either gasoline or diesel fuel, whatever it may be.
Well, I mean, given the usual approach to this in terms of the argument that if you've got too much money chasing too few goods, then it makes no sense to infuse more money into the system, yet that's exactly what they did in March with their attempt to try to help with COVID. And then these two bills that have not gone one did, the infrastructure bill, was another $1 trillion-plus infusion of money. And then, of course, if the Build Back Better bill ever gets put into law, it seems to me that that would just drive this inflationary pressure to places where you're back to the Weimar Republic.
Well, unfortunately, Socialist Democrats are desperate. They believe the only way they can win in 2022, hold on to House and Senate, is by giving away a lot of free money. And unfortunately, again, they are joined by some of our debt junkie rhino Republicans. We had, I think it was 13 House members who helped them pass a $1 trillion spending bill, none of which we have, all of which we have to borrow to get, none of which we can afford to pay back. And on the Senate side, if my memory serves me correctly, there were about 19 debt junkie Republicans who agreed with that spending bill. I mean, we just can't keep doing that and expect there not to be some very dangerous, very adverse circumstances and results.
Well, let me ask you this then. I mean, let's just turn to the campaign for a second. Are the candidates who are running against you, are any of them willing to say what you just said about rhinos and the debt business, and are willing to say that they are not going to go down the same road that we have seen in terms of the spending predilections?
I have seen nothing to suggest to me that either Katie Britt or Mike Durant is financially conservative when it comes to spending public tax dollars. Now, Katie Britt has a long history of being for tax increases, particularly at the state level. She was the primary sponsor or power behind the 10-cent per gallon gasoline tax increase.
Right.
But she's also publicly come out for raising income tax rates by 20%, increasing property tax rates, increasing sales tax rates, increasing utility taxes, which in turn increase our utility bills, increasing sales taxes on automobiles, increasing property transfer taxes, real estate. Just go down the list. So we have diametrically different views on who ought to keep their money, the people who have earned it or the government.
Right. Well, as I was telling people in our endorsement of you, I mentioned Katie Britt's support of the gas tax while she was the president of the Business Council of Alabama. So I think that, it's quite true that we need to do a very good job of making sure that she is outed on that tax issue, because it is toxic down here in Alabama. So let me switch to another thing then, another topic that I think is certainly dominated the news last week, which was this January 6th investigation, okay, if you want to call it an investigation. Critics have been saying that there are issues that are out there that are legitimate issues above and beyond the fact of what happened, that they're trying to dig into who planned the so-called insurrection and all like that. The terminology that's been used is certainly more than debatable, but be that as it may, there are some serious questions, particularly one that comes up in what happened to the Capitol Police and not being aware of what's going on, not being responsive to issues pertaining to the president, Trump at the time, asking for National Guard support. So, I mean, as you've looked at this, what are some of the questions that you would like to see answered? And I'm assuming that if the Republicans are successful, which we all hope they will be in November of 22, that these kinds of questions will be investigated. But what is your sense of those questions that are being left off the table for political reasons?
Well, a big one would be the role of Democrat congressmen in all this. So far, the Pelosi-Winchett Committee has only interviewed Republicans. I would like to know what Nancy Pelosi knew, and when did she know it? She's in charge of Capitol Security. I would also like to know, from interviews of those individuals who have been convicted, what motivated them to do what they did? Was it voter fraud and election theft? Was it a collapsed economy and loss of wealth because of the Democrats' attack on our ability to earn a living? What was it that caused them to get so angry that they engaged in criminal activity in the United States Capitol? So there are lots of questions I would like to ask, and a lot of other Republicans would like to ask, but unfortunately, the Democrats, in a highly partisan way, have shut House Republicans out of the process.
Well, let me ask you this. In terms of Pelosi's responsibility, it's my understanding that the sergeant-at-arms was asked for some support and was told that that kind of support could only come from above, meaning Pelosi, and that so far they have refused to allow any kind of discussion of her role in saying no to the National Guard. Is that basically your understanding?
Well, I don't know the answer to a lot of these questions because I'm not on Nancy Pelosi's witch hunt committee. There are no Republicans who were nominated, submitted by the Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, who are on that committee. And we had five Republican congressmen who were submitted to that committee, and Nancy Pelosi rejected all five. So all we have are what I call Pelosi Republicans, and I use that name because that's the name that our GOP leader, Kevin McCarthy, uses in describing Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. And both of those, as you know, are on the way out. Adam Kinzinger has already given up trying to run for re-election, so he's out at the end of this term. And Liz Cheney is running in Wyoming, a state where the Republican Party has publicly declared that they no longer consider her a Republican.
Well, that's all, you know, to the good as far as getting rid of them. But certainly the damage is done, the fact that she's on TV, you know, talking about her various, you know, talking about Trump's role in this and those kinds of things. And it just seems to me that she's kind of, you know, lost the bubble on this for whatever reason. But it seems particularly appalling that this committee could be constructed without the people that Kevin McCarthy wants on there. I mean, isn't that a violation of the normal process of committee assignment?
To my knowledge, it has never before happened in the history of the United States Congress that the majority party has refused to accept any of the minority party submittal to what's supposed to be a bipartisan committee.
Well, I know that this is an inside baseball question, but Liz Cheney was on with Bret Baier last week, and she claims that she's the ranking member. And Molly Hemingway quickly came back in rebuttal and says, no, she's not. She's the vice chair, but that has nothing to do with her true status. Now, here again, we get back to an inside baseball issue, but it seems to me it's germane to this whole process, which is just flawed from the outset.
Well, she is the ranking Pelosi Republican, but she's not the ranking Republican because we have no Republicans on the committee.
Right. Okay. Let me turn to another January 6th related question, if I can. It has to do, and I think people down here are just put out beyond belief about what's going on in terms of these prisoners who have been locked up since January 6th and have, you know, these gulag type you know, conditions to live with and a lack of actual legal process. Have you taken a look into this in any way that would shed some light on this? I know a couple of your colleagues have been down there, but what is your sense of what's going on there, and what should we expect to see happen?
Well, we have a lot of battles going on in Washington, D.C., and I tend to focus on those that I actually have votes on. Mm-hmm. I have looked some at what is happening with those people who are being prosecuted because of their alleged conduct on January the 6th. By and large, here is the problem. Congress won't do anything because Congress is controlled, the House and the Senate, by a political party that would just as soon throw all of these people in jail and throw away the key.
Right.
The White House won't do anything for the same reason. So we're in a bad position now. Each of these individuals, under the law, they have the right to file a writ of habeas corpus. They have a right to seek bond and post bail as circumstances allow. And if the trial courts aren't complying with our constitutional rights, then each of these defendants has the right to appeal their being held in jail to an appellate court. But there are, 700 and something different cases. All of them are being treated uniquely because each defendant is unique, each circumstance is unique, and I don't have a way to really lump them all together. I will add this. I am very discouraged that our justice system seems to be targeting this group of people and treating them differently than they are treating Black Lives Matter defendants or Antifa defendants who around the United States in 2020 engaged in a lot more violence, caused a lot more death, caused a lot more destruction, particularly arson. Under the law, we're supposed to believe in equal protection, and the law should treat everybody equally. But that does not appear to be the case from what I've been able to observe in these instances.
Well, let me just follow up on that. If that is the case, which I think you're exactly right about, what should the Republican Party be doing in terms of getting this message out? It just seems to me that it's sort of under the cover here. And every now and then, like McCarthy, I saw him on one of the shows this weekend. He brought those kinds of issues out. But at the same time, there doesn't seem to be a continual drumbeat of opposition. And I recognize what you're saying, that you don't have a vote on some of these things. So, you can't, spread yourself so thin that you're not going to be effective where you actually have an impact. But is there within the Freedom Caucus some sense of this injustice and the degree to which that Freedom Caucus can start raising hell about it?
We have some congressmen who are doing their best to highlight what is going on with these particular set of defendants. The problem is that the fake news media either ignores their comments or suppresses it.
Right.
It's akin to what we've seen with voter fraud and election theft concerning the 2022 election. In virtually every single article I have ever read from the fake news media, they will always editorialize that any statement of voter fraud and election theft is false, that it's unproven, when that is absolutely not the case. But unfortunately, that's exactly what the fake news media does. They're in the hip pocket of these people who engaged in voter fraud and election theft.
Well, let's just take that up, because I think that one of the things I wanted to ask you about this continuing drumbeat from Biden that it's Trump's lies about the election that caused January 6th. We can argue that point, but what I am interested in is looking at the 2020 election, which you and I have done on previous programs. But as you looked at the problems, when you correctly stated just a minute ago that this whole business in 2020 was a real problem because there was election fraud and worse, okay? So given where we are in our thinking, and despite the fact that, the mainstream media doesn't want to admit it, can you just give us a thumbnail sketch of how some of these states, and I know we've talked about Arizona before, how some of these states have made progress in rectifying what we saw in 2020? Because I think that's the real critical issue, whether or not election integrity is going to be able to be upheld in 2022.
Well, I don't know how much progress that's being made in any of the states to secure our election system. Georgia is perceived to have made some progress. My impression is that it's not enough. Ditto for Arizona. I would like to see us comply with Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, the Election Clause, where only legislatures and Congress can set the, quote, times, places, and manner, end quote, of elections. I think that's important. I would like to see us comply with the United States Code section that sets a day for the election, that day being the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. I think most of us understand what a day is. It's 24 hours. That means that is the day that you vote, and there is no other time at which you vote unless it's expressly permitted as an exception of the United States Code. And there are some exceptions, like our military overseas, or people who are disabled for some reason and can't get to the polls on election day.
Right.
This mass mail-out of ballots, in my judgment, that violates the United States Code, and to the extent it was ordered by a judge or a Secretary of State or a governor or anybody else, then it violates Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution that only empowers legislatures and Congress to set the times, places, and manner of elections. So there are lots of things that should be done that aren't being done at the federal government level. We need to do something to stop non-citizens from voting in our elections. It's horrible. Government Accountability Office, by way of example, did a study about 2 decades ago now in which they found that as much as 3% of registered voters were non-citizens. How in the world are that many people, and the hundreds of thousands or millions, whatever it may ultimately be, getting registered to vote and voting in our national elections? We're supposed to be, American citizens are supposed to be, controlling the future of our country, but that's not the case. Now, in fairness, part of the problem is what the federal government has done. There is the Motor Voter Act that was passed, I think, in 1993.
Yeah.
Section 5 makes it illegal for states to require proof of citizenship before registering someone to vote, and a lot of non-citizens have exploited that loophole. By way of example, in our own Alabama delegation, Richard Shelby voted for that. That is just astonishing to me. Now, in fairness, he was a Democrat back then, and he switched parties and became a Republican. I don't know if that changed his philosophy of government any, but that provision in the National Voter Registration Act needs to be repealed. We ought to limit registration to vote to American citizens. So there are a lot of things that can be done, but right now in Washington, we're just holding on by our fingernails trying to prevent the Democrats from passing their Voter Fraud Enhancement Act that would legalize a lot of things that the Commission on Federal Election Reform in 2005 said we need to fix.
Well, I mean, you're fighting a real problem when you've got New York approving, you know, voting rights for non-citizens in New York, 800,000. California has already gone down this road in local elections for school boards and things like that. So, I mean, you are fighting a trend within the Democratic Party, which seems to be, you know, a lost cause as far as fixing that. But on the other hand, you do have some tools available in terms of challenging all of these things in the courts. I mean, it just seems to me that, and again, I'll come back to the Freedom Caucus as really the bulwark against what is going on. Is there anything going on, or is there something that we as grassroots people can do to push the Freedom Caucus to become more aggressive about this and let people know what's going on? I mean, one of the things that we've seen here is that there is an election integrity question here in Alabama, which we are pursuing. But again, Alabama has an A-plus rating, so it's kind of hard to fight this fight here. On the other hand, we know places, like you've mentioned some, that do not have A-plus ratings. So, again, I guess my question really is, are there centers of opposition that can be used to press forward to try to correct these constitutional violations that we've already seen? I know some of it is going on at the state level, but coming from the Freedom Caucus to articulate what you just did, it seems to me that's one of the things that really should be done.
Well, there are plenty of things that can be done. The problem is we've dug ourselves a deep hole. The American people have elected these socialists, these rhino Republicans, and we're suffering the consequences of those unwise decisions. We don't have enough people at the federal level to pass anything that is constructive that will help suppress voter fraud and election theft. We just don't have the votes in the House. We don't have the votes in the Senate. And, of course, we don't have the signature in the White House.
Right.
At the state level, I encourage our citizens to volunteer to be poll workers. Go to your probate judge, your circuit court clerk, your sheriff has to be appointed a poll worker. Okay?
Right.
That's the election commission in each county, those three officers, if I recall correctly. But ask to serve so that you can help make sure that the voting system is honest and accurate. And if you don't like what our state laws are, and they can be improved, we could have random testing by way of examples of some of these voter machines to make sure that they're actually properly reporting the results. If you don't like what the legislature's doing, well, this is an election year. Either find a legislative candidate, House or Senate, who will do what you want, or run yourself. That's what it comes down to.
Let me ask you this. I know that when you spoke at our Stand Up Alabama, you were still waiting to hear about the machines and the degree to which the machines were susceptible to penetration. Have you had a chance to get any more information on that? And many of us are starting to say, why don't we just do away with the machines and go back to the old-fashioned way of voting, which was a lot more secure. What's your sense of that?
Well, I don't like, if you're talking about paper ballots,
yeah,
and nothing else, where people read them and write down the results, I don't like that system, because okay, there's a lot of voter fraud that occurs in that system.
Right.
Where whoever the workers are just misreport the results on a particular ballot.
Okay.
Okay? If they're the ones doing the hand counting or whatever. So I disagree with that. To me, the best system is to have paper ballots that go through a machine, what Alabama has, and then have random testing of the machines where you pull out the ballots and you count them by hand to see if the hand count matches what the machine is reporting. That is far and away the best system to determine, in my judgment at least, to determine whether the ballots that are submitted are in fact being accurately counted.
Okay. Well, I know I've got a few more minutes, and maybe Lori will give me an extra couple of minutes. Maybe 3 or 4 minutes. Let's shift quickly to the campaign itself. What is your sense of where we are with the campaign and where we as grassroots organizations can help you with whatever you need to have taken care of?
Well, I sorely need the support of people who are conservatives. I am the only conservative running in this United States Senate race, period, exclamation mark, no question whatsoever. So if you're a conservative, then please go to mobrooks.com. That's my website. We need your help. We need your campaign contributions. We are being horribly outspent by special interest groups who have put in millions of dollars. They do not want a principled conservative United States Senate. They want someone who is malleable and will do the bidding of special interest groups. This is particularly true of those special interest groups who live off of cheap foreign labor, no matter the damage that is being done to struggling American families who are trying to make ends meet, who see their wages suppressed because of the surge in the labor supply caused by cheap foreign labor, and no matter the long-term effect to our country of a block vote for socialist Democrats that comes from either these cheap foreign laborers or their children. So there are long-term consequences to what these very special interest groups are engaged in, and it's costing Americans a lot of money, and it's also undermining the future of our country. So please get the word out. Now, if you want that cheap foreign labor, well, of course you're not going to vote for Mo Brooks, because I have the number one border security record out of 435 congressmen. Number one, according to Numbers USA, every single year that I've been in the United States Congress. I don't want this cheap foreign labor coming into America, taking jobs from American citizens, and undermining the wages of American citizens. I want employers to have to compete for American labor, thereby forcing our employers to pay whatever it takes to hire the employees that they need. At the same time, I want to stop paying so many people not to work, so that there is a larger pool of Americans who are willing to work because they have no choice.
Well, Congressman, we have run out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on today and clarifying these points that have been raised, and really articulating a truly conservative approach to governance, which, as we all agree, is totally lacking. Thanks again very much, and I hope you get your throat cleared up so you can continue to voice your outrage at the kind of stuff we're having to deal with. Thanks again, Congressman.
Appreciate it, Lou, and God bless.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, folks, once again, we get back to, why common sense went ahead and endorsed Congressman Brooks at this particular time. You can certainly hear the differences between he and Katie Britt, And this really is a race between those two. And I think that we're going to get more of that information out about why Katie Britt is not fit to be in Congress as a senator. And we'll just go from there. The fight has just begun. And hopefully we will be in that fight. And people, please go to mobrooks.com and do what you can to support him. Grassroots money, $5, $10, $15, that helps. And I think it's important that we do that to send that signal. So, Miss Lori, thus another Monday gone.
Time flies.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I do have one question real quick.
Okay.
You referred to the Freedom Caucus more than once. What is that?
The Freedom Caucus is essentially a group of very conservative people within the House of Representatives, okay? Mo Brooks started it. Mark Meadows was involved with it. You have about 30 or so of the essentially Tea Party group. It's a residual effect of the Tea Party that you had this Freedom Caucus, and that's where we are with it. And so you've got this group that really does push, you know, the Republicans to remain true to those principles that got them elected, took over the Congress in 2010, took the Senate in 14, and kept it for until 2018. So that's basically what it is.
Okay.
It's our best defense against the rhinoism and the socialists that are trying to do harm to this country. So, Lori, we'll see you next week. Y'all take care out there. God bless. And listen, Common Sense Campaign has its Welcome Back rally. We're going up to Montgomery on Thursday, the 13th. Go to Common Sense Campaign website. We have a bus going up. It's $40, two pickup points. One in Theodore at Magnolia Springs Baptist Church, and another at Cole's over in Spanish Fort near,
the
Bass
Pro Shop.
Thank you very much. It's Monday.
CommonSenseCampaign.org. Find them on Facebook.
Exactly. Okay,
Thank
you very much. Bye.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campo Minosi. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highway 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com.